Today I would like to talk about the Buddhism that relates to us. After all, if it doesn't relate to us, that we can't get answer from the Buddhist way of things, then it is just another, sort of things that doesn't work. Look good on the paper, nice to listen to, nice to hear, but can't really solve anything in life. By the way, Buddhism is not a religion as such, even though it is regarded as one of the world's major religions, but it is a way of life, a way of life into an investigation of the root, to the roots of the problems. We call it a yoniso manasikara, that is, giving wise attention to the roots of things, why things happen that way. So it is mostly related to an investigation to the causes and effects and causes and conditions, and then trying to understand it in order to be able to understand life. Like when the car breaks down, we can't be upset and kick the car and, you know, all sort of things coming out of the mouth. No matter how much we kick the car wouldn't start. We have to, first of all, find out what's wrong with the car. Is that a flat battery? No petrol? Anything. If it's the battery's flat, if we change it, we don't have to come out anything from the mouth. Just change the battery and then it will start. Same thing. If there is no petrol, don't have to get upset. Calm and peaceful, and find out, oh, there's no petrol, there's no anger, no anxieties, no worries, just go and get petrol and put it in, and the car starts and you drive away. That's what Buddhism is about, doing things without trying to get upset, trying to get angry, trying to be vengeful, trying to be hateful, but understanding life as it is, how life is. Like that car, if there is no petrol, that's all it is. There is no petrol. You can cry, you can scream as loud as you can swear at people, you can scold people. the car wouldn't start. Only when you find out, look for it, what is the problem with the car? Oh, there's no petrol. Go get a can and then buy petrol and put it in. You may have to walk a distance, doesn't matter. Your mind is peaceful. That's what Buddhism is all about. So, to start with, we need to somehow go to the heart of Buddhism without, going around it. And Buddhism is the main, core unit. One of the main core, wisdom is that what we think we are is not actually what we are. it sounds quite ambiguous, actually. What are you saying? I'm not me, isn't it? I'm so and so. I'm Tom and Dick and Harry. Are you saying, and Sally? Are you saying I'm not Sally? I'm not Tom. I'm not Harry. So, this is the core of it. Buddhism dared to go to places where no other has gone, isn't it? Am I me? Are you you? That's what Buddhism is saying exactly. Yes, what you think you are is not. You are not you. I'm not me. But then again, I have to let you know that I'm talking from the two planes. One is from the everyday conventional reality that you see with your eyes, that you hear with your ears. The other one is the ultimate truth that is above that everyday conventional reality, ultimate reality. So Buddhism states that, what you think you are is not what you are. What I think I am is not what I am. So in essence is that we need to challenge it, as I said, not to accept it. Buddha never asked you to accept blindly, to follow him blindly, to challenge him. Okay, what is that then? It is me, My name is Harry. My name is Sally. So we need to go, you know, deeper and beyond this conventional reality. In Buddhism, we identify a human being as a mind and a body, made up of a mind and a body. So when we see that way, we see not as Tom, not as Mary, but we see as a mind and a body. And we don't have a woman and a man either. It's just a mind and a body. So that's how Buddhism sees a human being as an entity, a mind and a body. So what does a human being do then? Then as a human being, you must have a body, of course. Without a body, as a human being, we can't call ourselves a human being. So must have a body and must have feelings, of course, isn't it? We know what feelings are all about. And must have ability to have this, interpret things, isn't it? You know, so, this concept of this, the mind that can see things, consciousness, you know, like, you can hear me now, that is hearing consciousness. You can see me now, that is sight consciousness. So this consciousness as well. And perceptions. Perceptions is as in, some people stereotype, oh, he's good, he's bad, she's good, she's bad. Or the oranges are sour or sweet, apple are sweet and juicy, etc. These are the perceptions that you build up from your experience, life experience. And then the mental formations of a thought process, this and that, like, dislike. So a human being have these five aggregates. A body, feeling, perceptions, consciousness, and mental formation. So Buddhism see is the ultimate reality, a human being as an entity, and what human being, comprise of. That's what is a human being. Then the other question is, in Buddhism, what does a human being do? Isn't it? I always enjoy saying this. By looking at all the faces, I know exactly what all of you have done. There's no secrets. Isn't it? All our lives, the only thing that we've been able to do is hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, seeing and thinking. That's all we do. Hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, seeing and thinking. We can't do any more than that. That's what human being does. With the eyes, they see. With the ears, they hear. With the tongue, they taste. With the nose, they smell. With the body, they touch. With the brain, the mind, they think. That's all human being, all along since we started walking on this planet, that's what we've been doing. That's how Buddhism classifies a human being functions as. So that's where the problem comes in, from this hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching and thinking. Like, dislike, comes up. From that like, dislike, depending on the skills we have, we acted, we have spoken, actions and speech that follows. From these attitudes, what the mind, presently has. So a restless mind, an unstable mind will have the words and speech and actions that reflect to that. And a stable mind, a calm mind, will have actions and speeches reflecting to that state. So we are going to that. What is a human being? What is its comprises of? What do they do? And where are the problems coming on? So the first one, to go back to the original question that, what we are is actually not what we think we are. So when we say that a human being is an entity of a mind and a body, we take the body first. Let's make a strong statement. this is my body, my MY, big MY, capital MY, my body in bold. This is my body, mine, right? Let's make a big, strong statement. Okay, see whether we control this body or not. I will write down now in front of all of you as witness. Excuse me. I will say to my body, body, you are my body. I control you, so you must obey me. I want to live to 120, strong and healthy until the day I drop dead, right? And then when I die, I want to die in spring because it's a good weather. And then, see, I want to die on Sunday because everyone's off and they can come to my deathbed, right? And I say, make it about 2 o'clock, then I can have a good lunch before I die. I'll write it down in front of all of you as witness. Will my body listen to you? Think about it very carefully. Impersonality of the body. Why? Because it is going according to its own schedule, timetable. How long it lasts depending on, you know, what sort of food we eat, what sort of exercise we do, what sort of lifestyle we have, what sort of drink we have. People who's chain smoking and drinking, taking drugs, wouldn't live long to the old age. Causes and conditions. Impersonal nature of this body. Okay, immediate things, because 120 years is quite a long way and you wouldn't be able to watch it, isn't it? So, immediately, tomorrow morning when you get up, alright, tell your body, I'm very busy. Tomorrow is Sunday, I'm going to see lots of people, going to have lots of fun, so I'm going to get ready early in the morning. So I'll be very busy, don't go to toilet. When I come back, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, plenty time, then you can do whatever you like. I give you permission, my body, you do that. And in the morning, when you get up, you know, see what happens. You ordered your body not to go to the toilet. You have your breakfast and you have to drink and don't go to the toilet at all. See what happens. Your body demands you. Your body said, this is my requirements, regardless of your feelings, of your requirements, of your order, of your egocentric commands. This is my requirement. You go to the toilet or else. That's what the body will reply to you. So do you really control your body? Do you really want that cancer? That cancer you have? Do you say, body, okay, when I'm about 35, 40, get cancer? Do you tell that to your body? Why do you have cancer? Isn't it? Why do you have cold? Immediate problems. In winter, we got cold. Tell your body, don't catch cold. You're not allowed to catch cold. Isn't it? But it does. Because it's impersonal. Nothing to do with your feelings. Nothing to do with your desires and wishes. The body is going on its own causes and conditions. Think very carefully on everyday conventional reality. Yes, it seems to be our body because when we want to jump, it jumps. When we want to eat, it eats. Isn't it? So, think about it carefully. Impersonal nature of the body, right? What we think our body is actually not ours. Isn't it? Think carefully. This is to investigate, not to accept it. Then you can understand only with intuitive understanding. Without intuition, it'll be like this everyday conventional outlook. This is my body. How come it's not my body? Isn't it? You look at one of the most distinguished person in this age, like Einstein. Look at Professor Stephen Hawking, isn't it? His mind is a giant of a mind. A huge mind, but very powerful mind. He can't let his body, order his body to get up and walk and talk. He can't. because it's impersonal. The body is in its own causes and conditions like that, isn't it? A person lying in coma at the hospital, the body is lying there, it's not there, just the mind is absent. Can that body get up by itself and make a kapha, watch the television? Isn't it? You look at it. So, this is for you to investigate. I'm not going to tell you what the answer is. That's very obvious. In the ultimate reality, this is, you know, the body is not personal. It's impersonal. Okay, then, you know, what about the mind then? Isn't it? It's the mind, this mind, my mind, isn't it? When we are meditating, you said concentrate on this breathing, breathing in and breathing out. And what did your mind do? Does it stay there concentrating on this breath? How come it goes here, it goes there? It's your mind, you know, don't forget. You can control it. Mind, you are my mind, stay there on this breath, isn't it? Because it is also like the body, not personal. You look at it intuitively, isn't it? How come the mind is going into thoughts, jumping from one thought to the other? Because the mind has experienced these things before, this prior to this meditation, since you were little, since you have consciousness of what you have done, what it has seen, what it has experienced. Who you have talked to, what happiness you have, what disappointments you have, it's all coming back from those causes and conditions to now. It is just chewing up from the memory box, picking up one out and then chewing it again from the memory box. That's all it is, nothing but a memory. But clinging is in it, attachment, we can't let go of it. We keep thinking about it. That's where the trouble is. So, if you look at this mind as well, you know, you can see that the mind is a natural process coming from these causes and conditions that has happened before. And if we don't see that intuitively, that the mind is a natural process, then we get caught into it like a stream flowing down. And we just, you know, like a leaf that drop into that stream, wherever the current takes, it goes, and we when with that mind that is going as a natural process. Put a young lovely lady in my place, and then a man came in and praised her, you know, oh, how beautiful you are, you know, so you're so young and you're so beautiful. She's so happy. And that man went out. Another man came in and started abusing her, you know. You little this and that, you know. You know, your hair looks so horrible, your makeup look this and that. She'd be upset, frustrated, angry, and she'll cry even, isn't it? Take this little lovely young lady out, bring in a young man. And then the first man came in again and said, oh, you look so young and so strong and so handsome. He's so happy. And the man went out. Another man came in and started abusing him. You haven't showered, have you? You stink, this and that. He's angry and he's so upset. He's not happy anymore. So take this young man out. Bring an old lady. The first man came in and praised her. She's happy. The second man came in and blamed her. She's unhappy. So take that old lady out. Bring a truckie in this place. The first man came in and said, oh, gee, you are so big and strong. Look at your big rig, you know, it's so big and so powerful, you know. He's so happy, so proud. And the man, first man went out, second man came in again, started abusing him, you know. You reckless driver, this and that, truckies are this, truckies are that. He'll be angry, isn't it? Through that anger, violent action might follow. So if you look at this scenario, from a little lovely lady to a young man to an old lady to this truckie, isn't it? Everyone reacts the same, men, women, no matter who they are. That's a natural process of the mind that is not trained, the mind that cannot see things. We'll be happy when you are praised, we'll be very unhappy when you are blamed. So we live with praises and blames of this life. That's what the natural mind does. So by seeing this, a natural process of the mind that is going through, that belongs to everyone, which everyone will react, then you have the wisdom that is the restless mind. You know, the mind that is going through restlessly on its natural course, actually going to negative things, we don't need to follow. We don't need to follow. And understand that that mind is the mind that is acting and reacting naturally to the things, causes and conditions and circumstances that is there. So if you have a bit of wisdom that glows in you, that start getting the wisdom, then you see that, oh, I'm being conned by this natural process. And when the natural process said, be happy, you may be happy, but you have with happiness with wisdom. And when that natural process comes in and said, now unhappy, now get angry, now hate, then you don't. With the wisdom, you say, you know the causes and conditions. You go to that, and you have a different way of responding, rather than responding weakly, very weak, like before. Now the strong mind will suggest you which way you turn. Somebody coming in really fast behind you while you're driving, aggressively, you know, tooting and horning you. And your mind said, natural process said, be angry. Open the window and show signs and this and that. When they pass, every obscenity from the mouth, give it to them. That's a falling prey to the natural process of the mind. When you have wisdom, oh, he might be upset, he might be in a hurry, drive a little bit faster if you can, or if you have two lanes, change lanes and let them go. You don't fall prey to the natural process anymore. You have wisdom. There must be a reason. Nothing come off the blue and say, that car at the back didn't even see your face, never seen you before, suddenly out of spite come and, you know, do that to you. There's a reason for them. They like driving fast, or they may be in a hurry, you know. Then, you know, you let them go. No problem. They go drive fast their way, their own, you know, causes and conditions, you know. You go on your own causes and conditions with your wisdom. You drive peacefully. When I drive, I always look at the car. I choose a spot where I can drive peacefully. If people, you know, come close to me, if they want to pass, I let them go. Change lane and this and that. I drive the speed, not to upset them. So, I always drive quite peacefully. So, before you drive with this understanding. Now, am I going to fall prey to this natural process of the mind, which is impersonal? Or will I use my wisdom and tame this mind and I won't fall prey to it? So, from these examples, that you can see that the body as well as the mind is impersonal. So what we cling to as my body, my mind, it is just clinging to something that is impersonal. Something like falling in love with somebody who doesn't love you. Isn't it? It's one-way street. And you are, you know, being conned all the time. Wake up. Have wisdom. The impersonalities, the nature of impersonalities of this mind and this body, try and understand intuitively. Of course, you have to reconcile with the conventional reality, everyday life. Of course, under the conventional reality, it is your body still, because you're attached to it. It's the mind still attached to you under the conventional reality. So you have to look after your body. It is your duty to make it healthy, to make it, you know, clean. And it is your duty to make the mind calm and peaceful for the benefit of yourself, for your family, for your loved ones, and for the community and for other people. So this, today, I would like, this is my offering to you, the Buddhist explanation of this mind and body that is impersonal, in other words, non-self, called anatta. Thank you.